Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Sadie's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up a little bit later on, we've been talking about Dabo Swinney and the Clemson Tigers. We heard from the head coach last hour in regards to the transfer portal. We can continue to break that down, but we'll also hear from the basketball coach Brad Brunell after yesterday's ACC Media Day for basketball. I mean, the NBA is about to get up and running. College basketball is not far behind. We'll hear from the Tigers basketball head coach a little bit later on. A whole lot more to do throughout the afternoon as well. How big of a test will Saturday be for South Carolina? And who is taking advantage? Who has benefited the most from this college football season? We'll get to all that coming up and more throughout the afternoon. But we always talk golf at this time every Wednesday, and we do so with our resident golf expert. He's on Twitter at Jay Schill. He writes for PGA Magazine, and he's Jeremy Schilling, who's with us now. Jeremy, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Luke Morrow. How are you?
Doing well. Hey, you know, your Jets, you really let me down. We talked about the Jets-Falcons in London last week. I even took the Jets as one of my picks. They didn't come through. Did you get up early Sunday to watch that game?
Yes. And didn't you see my tweet promoting today's spot on the show?
Oh, no. Let me go back. I got to look at this. Why? It involved the Jets? Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, whoops. Oh,
I said I'll talk anything golf except the Jets.
I see it now. I already broke the one rule. Oh, geez. All right. So moving on.
No, it's all good. Seriously, Luke, this is a slow-starting team. And you know it as a Vikings fan. When you're slow-starting, you're behind the eight ball to begin with. That doesn't help anybody's cause. They have to get off to better starts. And what Adam Archuleta and Robert Saleh said is accurate. They have to get better at doing the boring things. Right now, Zach Wilson's great if you need him to create something like Patrick Mahomes. But right now, he can't hit screen passes in the right place. That's a problem.
If you were on the West Coast, would you like football to come on at 9 and be over, you know, at lunchtime? Did you like that 9:30 kickoff on Sunday?
No.
Yeah, me either.
No. I don't know how they do it. I would not want 6:30 football, that's for sure. But look, I was ready to go and in a nice mood, and then the rest of my day was kind of blah.
Yeah, I hear you.
Until I got to watch Majestic Golf and by the play of Sun J.M.
Wow, look at that. What a transition. What a pro. Talking with Jeremy Schilling. Let's talk some golf. Yeah, M gets the win, his second PGA Tour victory this past weekend coming in Vegas. What were your takeaways from that as you flipped off the Jets and watched that on Sunday?
Yeah, first of all, I have an apology to make to all the listeners out there. I did not realize that this event had changed names. Same sponsor, just changed names. It's now the Shriners Children's Open. So I apologize to anybody who was looking for hospitals and didn't find that as they were making their selections. Look, you shot a Sunday 62. That's going to win you a title most weeks in the PGA Tour. And he did it with a hot start. Turned in 30, birdied the first hole, and then birdied four straight holes to start the back nine. And it became, you know, come and chase me. And none of the chasers could give chase. And four-shot win, just really commanding performance. And he is somebody who is a ball-striking machine when he's on. And just what we said with Sam Burns last week, if you have a strength in your game, and for images ball striking, all you need to do is have the cup become uncovered putting-wise, and you are golden. Ninth in strokes gained off the tee, sixth in strokes gained approach to the green, and he went from losing a stroke on the greens on Saturday to gaining nearly three strokes in the green on Sunday. That's called making putts, and he did that to perfection to get his second PGA Tour title.
And he beats out Matt Wolf. You know, you were very early on the Will Zalatoris hype train. You told us about Will, and then he went off to, has continued to do good things. Matthew Wolf, is he somebody similar, someone we need to keep an eye out on here moving forward?
So the thing to know about Matt Wolf is that he was a part of that trio, Matt Wolf, Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland, who came out on the scene in 2019 and took the PGA Tour by storm. This guy's straight out of college, and he wins the 3M Open. And then he really hit an emotional and mental and physical, because of a finger or hand injury, downturn. And he's got a funky swing, and it's a swing that relies a lot on timing and a lot on practice. And when you're not getting out of practice what you expect to, it can weigh on you. And it weighed on him a lot. He took a sabbatical, Luke, in the season last year, which is super rare. You do not hear of guys taking in-season sabbaticals. But it had gotten so bad for him coming out of COVID that he really needed to take the sabbatical. He shot 68 on Sunday, 3 under par. That is usually very much good enough to get the title. And the fact that he was not able to do it, I think, speaks to the fact that his game is trending in the right direction, that it took somebody to shoot that sheer amount, 62, 9 under par, to be able to get to where, to rip the title essentially away from Matt Wolf. He is trending in the right direction. Luke, he didn't play an event from April 25th until June 20th, New Orleans to the U.S. Open. Took 2 months off, and it really changed him. He's been trending in the right direction ever since, and I think this second-place finish is going to do a whole big boost of confidence for him, besides the fact that it was a solo second, which gets him 300 FedEx Cup points.
Talking with Jeremy Schilling. He's on Twitter at Jay Schill, our resident golf expert that breaks it down for us every Wednesday. An equipment rule change coming for 2022. What is it? Why should golf fans be concerned or be aware of this rule change?
You love New Year's Eve, don't you, Luke?
Of course.
The second the clock strikes midnight, you can no longer have any club in your bag besides your putter be over 46 inches.
Interesting.
This impacts about three people, seriously, in the PGA Tour. The amount of people, Phil Mickelson, Bryson DeChambeau, those are basically the only two big names who play drivers over 46 inches. It is a rule that is going to affect younger players more. We're talking about guys in college, elite amateurs and stuff. This is a local rule. The folks at home, weekend hackers, do not need to be concerned about this. They can continue to play whatever types of technology they want. This affects elite amateurs, and there's a whole bunch in the Charleston area, so keep this in mind for 2022. Can't have any club in your bag besides your putter be longer than 46 inches. It is trying to curb distance. It's the first in what will be a number of steps that the USGA and RNA are going to take. And by the way, Phil Mickelson won last week on the senior circuit. He won the Constellation Furyk and Friends.
Nice.
In Jacksonville. So huge congrats to Phil.
Yeah.
But, and he's not happy because he thinks that this has helped his career with the longevity. But we'll see what happens going forward here. This is going to affect very few people, but Charleston is an area that does have a lot of elite amateurs/pros, and they do need to know about this change come January 1st.
Yeah, that is very interesting. Talking with Jeremy Schilling about everything going on in golf. So explain this to me. You asked if I wanted $50,000. Who wouldn't? How can I get $50,000?
PGA Tour made a regulations change, and it increased the purse of the Players' Championship. It increased the purse of the Tournament of Champions. That stuff happens all the time, doesn't get headlines. You have to play 15 events in the PGA Tour to maintain your tour card. If you miss it and you already have privileges, you don't lose your privileges. You just lose voting rights. But if you're somebody who just gained your card, especially if you're a two-tour player, if you're playing in Europe in the PGA Tour, you have to play 15 or else you lose your card and you have to play at a non-member status, which is not easy to get. As incentive to make sure you reach that 50K number, that 15 event number, every player, whether you're somebody who plays 30 times a year like Sung Jae-in, whether you're 15 like Tiger was before the injury, whether you're somewhere in the 20s like most guys like Xander and Cantlay and Rory and JT are, as soon as you hit 15, you get a $50,000 check in the mail for you.
Nice. So that's all I have to do. I just have to play 15 times on the PGA Tour. I get $50,000. No problem there. All right.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I'll start.
And then you give
that
money to me, Luke, because I alerted you to it.
Yes, 10% finder's fee. That's correct. You get 10%. I'll keep the rest. We have the CJ Cup at Summit Club coming up this weekend. Starts tomorrow. What should we expect this weekend for the CJ Cup?
Yeah, so this is an event that's normally in South Korea. Because of the pandemic, it got moved to Shadow Creek in Las Vegas last year. It stays in the U.S. this year and goes to Summit Creek, which is a golf course way away from the Strip. It's known for huge undulation changes, and it is open to the wind. It has a deserty feel in some places. Things to know, and I said this in the promo tweet, there are two guys who have bullseyes on them this week, and that is Colin Morikawa and Maverick McNealy, and that is because this is their home golf course. Now, you rarely get to play at the club that you play and practice at every single day. This happens, though, on an annual basis in certain places. Jim Furyk always practices at TPC Sawgrass. Ryan Palmer always practices at Colonial. But the thing is, those are places that everybody has played at and seen. Summit Creek, just because not a lot of guys, big names, are based in Las Vegas, a lot of these guys, like Rory or Justin or Jordan or, you know, a bunch of these people, unless they've been to Vegas and went on a golf trip, which, Luke, I don't know how many people would, have not seen this golf course. So if you want to know where to miss it, where not to miss it, where to hit it, you know, what side of the green, is it okay being 8 feet above the hole, or is it better actually being 12 feet below the hole on the green for your putt because it's easier and the speed won't get away from you? Those two guys would have a whole lot of knowledge that a whole lot of people would like. And Mav is my pick this week because he's been trending in the right direction overall, and I think he uses that to his advantage. But as Colin said yesterday, he does not know what this will do to him mentally. There's a lot of places where you can feel overwhelmed and feel pressure when you're playing at your home club. Like, everybody's eyeing you and they expect it. Yeah. And I'm sure the betting odds are heavily in Colin's favor this week, not only because of what he did at the Ryder Cup, but because he is a member at Summit Club. So a lot of bullseyes in a lot of places this week, and would not be surprised if somebody sneaks up and grabs this title, a Harry Higgs type figure who kind of sneaks up on us and grabs it while all the attention's on all these big names coming back out. And you name them, they're basically all there this week. So it's a very intriguing week when you get a home course advantage that basically nobody else in the field has.
Yeah, yeah, that is interesting. Before we let you go, I hate to end on a negative, but there was a loss in the golf world recently. Just wanted to touch on that with you before we let you go.
Yeah. The RNA announced that Renton Laidlaw, who was the voice of the European Tour for many, many years on UK broadcasting and then eventually on the European Tour productions feed that was broadcasted back here in America, passed away at 82. Unique voice, distinctive style, love to take you places and kind of bring you in. And for those out there who have been watching Golf Channel since the beginning, it didn't have a lot of rights early on to various tours. And the European Tour was one of the tours that it did have rights for. And the first voice ever heard in live tournament coverage on Golf Channel was Renton Laidlaw. Hmm. So it's a sad loss for the golf industry, coming on the back of losing Peter Alliss earlier this year. Those two guys are basically the voices of golf in Europe and have been for a long time. So a big loss. You've seen statements put out today by Golf Channel, by various golfers, golf announcers. Nick Faldo noted that from between his writing career and his broadcasting career, Renton covered his entire career starting in 1975 for Sernick.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's a big loss for the industry. There really isn't an equivalent in the U.S. You can say Jim Nance, you can say Dan Hicks, you can say Mike Tirico, but there's a lot more parity in this country. Mm-hmm. And overseas, basically been two guys over the years, Renton Laidlaw and Peter Alice.
Yeah, that's interesting. And unfortunately, passed away. Thoughts and prayers to the family and the golf community as well. He's Jeremy Schilling on Twitter, at Jay Schill, writes for PGA Magazine. Our resident golf expert joins us every Wednesday to talk golf. Always allows you to end on a negative, but great insight stuff as always, Jeremy, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Sounds good. I'm going to give you a teaser to have this end on an up note.
Yes.
Next week, we will have a very, very interesting PGA Tour event. Ooh. Who wants to fly halfway around the world for 1 week?
Interesting. Well, I can't wait to talk about it and find out next week when Jeremy joins us a week from today, as he does every Wednesday to talk golf. Appreciate it. He's on Twitter at Jay Schill, writes for PGA Magazine. Appreciate the breakdown, as always. It is interesting this weekend for that CJ Cup. You have a couple of players, as Jeremy broke down, that will be able to sleep in their own bed this week. You know, there's pros and cons, like everything in life, but it's interesting. I've always remember hearing Boomer Esiason talk about it when he returned home to go play for the Jets. He's a Long Island guy. Of course, started his career at the Bengals, and towards the end of his career, he needed a new place to go play, and the Jets brought him in to be their quarterback. And he said he thought it'd be great. You know, you get to return home, play for the hometown team, get to return to Long Island, family and friends nearby. But as it unfolded, Boomer to this day still says he kind of regrets it because just so many distractions. When you're at home, right, with your family, your friends, they want to see you. They want tickets to the game. They're talking to you all the time. They're coming up, whatever it is. They're bothering you because you live right down the street again from all your old family and friends like you grew up with. And you're trying to focus on a season. So what Jeremy said there is interesting, that there are pros and cons. It's nice to be able to sleep in your own bed, to be familiar with the area, the golf course itself. But not only is there more pressure on you, there can also be more distractions. Now, a lot of times, right, you'd send the family away. Like, you know, family, you guys go out of town or you go to an Airbnb for this weekend. I got to focus on the golf. It's a little bit different when it's just one weekend for a golfer compared to an entire season for, say, a football player. But Boomer even cautioned Kyrie Irving, who came back home to play for the Brooklyn Nets, and that's a whole other thing. But Kyrie, he'd probably have the same distractions regardless. But remember last year, he was away from the team for a while. He went MIA, and then they saw he was out at the club partying for his sister's birthday, right? Because his family lives there, and it's you have those more distractions, more opportunities as a team for your player to get in trouble, right? They return home and meet up with their old buddies they grew up with sometimes. It's better that they're away from those people. Families bothering them. They're asking for money. They're asking for favors. You got an uncle down the road coming to see you. Just a lot more distractions. So I always found that interesting when Boomer would talk about that, former MVP quarterback. Everybody thinks it's great. Oh, yeah, go play for the hometown team, get to be back home, be close to my parents. It all sounds great on paper. Then you go and you do it, and you're like, oh, you know what? It was kind of nice when I was halfway across the country and could just focus on football and didn't have to worry about everybody, you know, knocking on my door. And the other thing he said, too, was the media attention. As a player, you have to block out the media. When you are in your hometown and they're writing about you in all the papers and those papers are on your family's doorstep, they reach out to you all the time about it. And you as a player are trying to tell them, like, yeah, I ignore all that stuff. Don't tell me about it. I don't want to know what they're writing in the papers. I intentionally avoid it. So you have that whole aspect as well. Now, again, that's different for a one-weekend golf tournament compared to a baseball player or football player over the course of their season. But those are some of the things that athletes may not think about when they want to go return home, in a sense. And then you have all these other things that are taking you away from just being able to focus on the sport. So you got a couple of guys sleeping in their own beds this weekend. There are some advantages. There are also some disadvantages. More pressure on you, more distractions. Sometimes it's nice. I'll talk to coaches for, you know, whatever team I'm working with, and they'll say, oh, yeah, I love going on the road. Right? They got a young kid at home. All right, they're great parents, whatever, you know, but sometimes you like one day in a hotel room by yourself. You actually can get some rest. You don't have all the stuff going on at home. You get away from it. Right? Sometimes teams play better on the road because you're just in a hotel with nothing to do, focusing on the game instead of being at home with a wife or kids or a family or your parents or whatever, and you got a game the next day, and they're calling you and texting you, and you got things to worry about. We'll see how things play out this weekend. Coming up, we didn't get to our top 10 list yesterday. We got off track a little bit, which can happen around here on the Morning Midday Show. So when we come back, We're going to do a Tuesday top 10 on a Wednesday. Why not? We make the rules around here. I'll give you a top 10 list. We will power rank the 10 best teams in the NFL because I don't think I've done a list like that since at least the start of the season. And now we're about a third of the way into the season already. Hard to believe. Who are the best teams in the NFL? I'll order them when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, now that we're about a third of the way through the NFL season, just about, who are the 10 best teams in the NFL? I'll let you know. Coming up in just a moment here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Jeremy Schilling talking about everything going on in the golf world. And if you missed anything from that conversation, you can always find it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. You know, we started a conversation talking about the Jets-Falcons game at 9:30. I think the West Coast, I think that's too soon. My brother lived out in California for a number of years. I think 10 a.m. on a Sunday, a little too early. I went out to visit him during the baseball season once, and the Red Sox were on TV at 10 a.m. And it was nice. Like, as soon as you wake up, you know, I had nothing to do. I was on vacation. As soon as you wake up, you know, oh, hey, the Red Sox are on. And then it's done with by 1 o'clock, and now you have your whole day ahead of you. It is kind of nice, you know, Sunday night football, Monday night football. He used to go out afterwards. You'd watch the game's over at 8 o'clock. It's like, all right, now we have our night. We could go do something now. That is kind of nice, but I think 10's a little too early. I've always said Central Time Zone is the best. Give me just an extra hour. Instead of Monday night football going to 11:30, right, 10:30 would be great. It starts at 7:15. Because I always picture dinner is like 6, 7 o'clock. You have your dinner, and then you're good to go. Baseball would then be 6 o'clock, so you come home from work. You work till 5. You come home. You grab something to eat. Game's on at 6. You know, baseball maybe, say, 3.5 hours, 3 to 3.5. So you're done with it. Game's over at, 9:30. That's pretty nice, instead of sometimes waiting up until 11. That's a big difference. So just give me an extra hour. That's all. That's all I need. I think the Central Time Zone's the best for sports viewing. But the number I always tell you is 66% of sports viewers are actually in the Eastern time zone. And the money's in the Eastern. That's why everything is always based off of Eastern time zone for the most part. And that's why you have to stay up until, you know, some of these baseball games especially. My goodness, they're going till 1 a.m. You know, five-hour playoff games that start at 8 o'clock, you got to stay up till 12:30. It's like, no thanks. I mean, give me an extra hour. That would be nice. That song, Bringing Us Back, I think was from, didn't they use that in The Wedding Singer? And in The Wedding Singer, if you remember the scene, we reference this movie all the time here on the Morrow Midday Show. But towards the end, when Adam Sandler's character sings the song for Drew Barrymore and Billy Idol comes on, like the PA on the plane, and says, you know, since we allow our first-class customers to do pretty much whatever they want, here's a song for you. Well, that's what we're going to do here. We usually do a top 10 list every Tuesday, but hey, it's my name on the show, so really I can do whatever I want. We didn't get to our top 10 list yesterday. We got to all sorts of other things. We ran out of time. Quite frankly, I kind of forgot about it. I never circled back to the top 10 list yesterday, so I figured, why not? Let's dust it off. Let's bring it back today. Even though today's a Wednesday, just like Billy Idol, right, we could do whatever we want. So it's our Tuesday top 10 on a Wednesday.
Time for the Tuesday top 10, where we rank anything from quarterbacks to cheeseburgers right here on the Morrow Midday Show. Interested?
Let's rank the 10 best teams in the NFL. Now, this is a power ranking. It's not just strictly based off of records. I certainly have to include records, but I also look at head-to-head and then just try to project certain matchups or the future. So these, to me, are the 10 best teams in the NFL and how I would order them as we're about a third of the way through. I mean, 17 games, teams have played 5. You're about as close to a third as you can get. Maybe after this week you could say it's more of a third. You get the idea. Top 10 teams in the NFL, power rankings. Number 10, I'm going to go with the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, look, the Bengals, early on in the season, were a little fortunate to win week one. And then week two, they played really bad against the Bears team that made the move to Justin Fields. You know, that was a bad loss. But
The Bengals are 3-2. They have a winning record. There's not many teams that do have winning records. At that number 10 spot, you're picking between 3-2 teams. And I was impressed, even though the Bengals had a lot of missed opportunities against the Packers this week with some missed kicks, same with Green Bay, I was still impressed that the Bengals hung in there. They made some mistakes, missed a field goal or two. Joe Burrow had a costly interception, but they also went down the field for the tying score. That showed me a lot. I know they were at home, but Green Bay going up against Aaron Rodgers to force overtime, to have a chance to win on more than one occasion, that impressed me with the Bengals. I wasn't sold on Cincinnati coming into this year. I wasn't really sold on them coming into that game. I thought that'd be a real good litmus test, an opportunity for them to show themselves. And they did, even in a loss. They lose on a field goal in overtime. They hung right there with Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay, albeit at home. I was impressed. Joe Burrow's playing really well. Ja'Marr Chase looks good. The offensive line's doing good enough. The defense is pretty solid. It's a much improved team from a year ago. Zach Taylor's a year older as a coach. I like this Bengals team. I still don't think they make the playoffs, but as of now, they're the 10th best team in the league. Number 9, I stay in that division, and I go with the Cleveland Browns. Now, the Browns still have to show me, you know, they need the ability to beat a good team. Their 3 wins have come against teams with losing records. That's my concern for Cleveland. As I've been saying the last couple of weeks, I don't think Baker is that type of franchise quarterback. I think we saw that this past week against the Chargers where he can't lead you on the game-winning drive. They took the football out of his hands on a 3rd down with a chance to put the game away. That's what I think holds back Cleveland. But that was one of the games of the year against the Chargers on Sunday, a good team on the road. And the Browns, just from a talent standpoint on paper, I mean, they have a top 5 roster in the NFL. My biggest concern is Baker Mayfield. But they lost to the Chiefs by 4. They lost to the Chargers by 5. And those are 2 of the better teams on paper in the AFC. I would like to see them beat a good team. Their 3 wins are against teams that are not in the top 10 of the NFL. They'll really be tested this Sunday. They host the Cardinals. That'll be a big-time game Sunday. And then we'll get a real good look at this Browns team because they've lost their 2 biggest games of the season so far. How do they do against Arizona at home on Sunday? My number 8 team in the NFL right now, the Green Bay Packers. This is where you get to a lot of teams that are 4-1. The Bengals and the Browns are each 3-2. Then I get to my 4-1 teams, and I have to try to order them. And I put the Packers number 8 because, well, Green Bay has still a negative point differential. They're 4-1, but they have been outscored this year. Their point differential tells you this is really more like a 2-3 team. And you look at the Packers and the games in which they've played this year, they got killed week 1. That was embarrassing. They were trailing in the second half to the Lions. They needed a last-second field goal to beat the Niners. The Steelers game, they won by 10. They were controlling that game. But if that blocked field goal is upheld, that's a different game in the second half. And then this past week, I know Mason Crosby made things more difficult than he should have, but it still came down to a field goal in overtime against the Bengals, a team that I thought the Packers wouldn't have much trouble with. So they still haven't really fully impressed me. Now they get the Bears this week, the Washington football team. Thursday night football at the end of the month, October 28th, they have to go on the road short week to the Arizona Cardinals. That'll be a big test for the Packers. These next 2 weeks against the Bears, the Washington football team, they shouldn't be tested. They're 4-1, but they really haven't played like a 4-1 team, minus point differential. That's why I put them number 8. Number 7, the Baltimore Ravens. Now, we talked about the Ravens yesterday after their impressive win. This is somewhat of a tough team to get a read on. They're 4-1. They've looked really good at times, but they've also looked pretty poor. You know, they coughed up a double-digit lead in the second half against the Raiders week 1. They beat the Chiefs week 2 because of a fumble recovery. They beat the Lions because of a last-second record-breaking field goal that needed to hit off the crossbar. They beat the Broncos, but Denver didn't have their starting quarterback for most of that game. And then they beat the Colts on Monday, which was a great comeback. Give them credit for the comeback, but you also have to give them some blame for falling behind by 19 at home to a 1-win Colts team in the first place. So I'm still kind of confused on this Baltimore team, but I put them number 7. I put them ahead of Green Bay because I do think they have looked more impressive. But I only put them number 7 because there still seem to be a lot of holes here. Blew that lead week 1, fortunate wins week 2 and 3. Beat a backup quarterback the next week. Needed a comeback to beat the Colts at home on an extra week, extra time to prepare on Monday night. So they've looked good. They've shown that potential. Lamar's playing well, but you also ask, you know, how come it took a last-second field goal against the Lions? How come you were down 19 against the Colts? There's still something missing here. Number 6, the Chargers. Now, I want to put the Chargers higher, but the Cowboys I have at number 5 because the Cowboys beat the Chargers. And head-to-head is important to me. And that was a win on the road. Now, granted, if you watch that game, the Chargers had plenty of opportunities. They lost on the last second field goal that was like 56 yards, and the Chargers had 2 separate touchdowns taken off the board. They had over 100 yards of penalties. They made a bunch of mistakes. Justin Herbert threw an interception in the end zone. Chargers shot themselves in the foot. But a win is a win. Cowboys beat the Chargers. So those two teams, I look at them. I think if they played again, the Chargers will win. I think the Chargers, if they played 10 times, the Chargers will win the majority of those games. I think the Chargers are a more well-rounded team. I just think they're a better team than the Cowboys. On that day, the Cowboys were better. They made fewer mistakes. So I'll give the Cowboys credit. I put them at number 5, the Chargers at number 6, because of that head-to-head matchup. But the Chargers, I think, get better as the year goes on. And the big difference for the Chargers, they used to find ways to lose games with their coaches. Now, with Justin Herbert, they find ways to win games. Other than that Cowboys. That Cowboys game's the one exception. They found a way to lose that one. And I thought, oh, same old Chargers. But the way they beat the Browns on Sunday, some of these other victories, when you have that quarterback like Justin Herbert, you always have a chance. I like this Chargers team a lot. I've liked them since the offseason. I've had them as a playoff team. I put them number 6 right now. I put the Cowboys number 5, again, because of that head-to-head matchup. Now, Dallas won't be tested very much in that division. And they're playing really well. That offense is flying around. My one concern for the Cowboys is the defense still. They have forced multiple turnovers in 9 straight games, which is something they have not done in like 3 decades, because that's hard to do and that's hard to rely on. Now, we've seen teams before. The New Orleans Saints won a Super Bowl 12 years ago playing that way. But I do think over the course of a season, you know, the Dolphins won 10 games last year relying on turnovers. Then this year, they're not getting the turnovers. They're a last place team. It's hard to rely on that over a long stretch of time. But maybe the Cowboys just keep it up. Diggs is fantastic. I went back through some old text messages. I still have the receipts from draft night 2 years ago when I was texting my brother and I said, I hope the Vikings take Diggs here in the first round. He's the best cornerback. He ended up going in the middle of the second round. So, you know, where Luke was right or wrong, that was one of them. I can pat myself on the back. I knew he would be a stud, and I wish the Vikings drafted him in the first round. Somehow he lasted to almost the third round. He's fantastic. He could be a wide receiver. I put the Cowboys at number 5. I'm just concerned, what happens if they don't get turnovers? Will their defense still play as well? Will they be able to beat some good teams? That's my biggest concern for them. Number 4 is the Rams. Now, I put the Cardinals number 3, the Rams number 4. And the difference being head-to-head. The Cardinals blew out the Rams. I think the Rams are a better team. I think if they play 10 times, the Rams win the majority. I think in that particular matchup, the Rams are on a hangover from their great win the week prior against the Patriots, or against the, I still do that, against the Buccaneers, Tom Brady's new team, and had an emotional letdown against the Cardinals. But again, on that day, the Cardinals were the better team. They're undefeated, so I put them at number 3. I put the Rams at number 4. I think the Rams, on paper, are still the second best team. They're the second most talented team in the NFC. And they're off to a 4-1 start. The Cardinals, I put at number 3. They deserve credit for being the last undefeated team. So I put them at 3. They beat the Rams. That's why they go ahead of L.A. They got a win this past week where they had to win with defense. I think that's important for them, because otherwise the Cardinals have always just won one way. They can't win physical football. They can't win with defense. They can't necessarily win when you have to run. They just win when Kyler Murray can get loose and throw it all over the place and run around and they can make plays. So I have plenty of concerns about the Cardinals. They deserve credit for being 5-0. Probably should have lost week 2. That would change how we would look at this team. But they are the last undefeated team. They did get a great win, blowing out the Rams 2 weeks ago. I put them at number 3. Behind the Buccaneers, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are number 2, because I believe if the Cardinals and the Bucs played today, the Bucs would win. I think if the Cardinals and the Rams played today, the Rams would win. But the Cardinals beat the Rams, so I have to put the Cardinals. I have to give credit to that victory. So I put the Cardinals ahead of the Rams, but I can't put them ahead of the Buccaneers. To me, Tampa Bay, they had a couple of close games, but then they got back home this past week, blew out the Dolphins. Tom Brady had the game of his career statistically at 44 years old. They won the Super Bowl last year. On a neutral field, you give me the Buccaneers against anybody, I'm trusting the Buccaneers. But number 1, I'm going with the Buffalo Bills. With that said, I would trust Brady on a neutral field against the Bills. I do think the Buccaneers are still the team to beat in the NFL. They are the defending champs after all. But I have to reward the success the Bills have had. They are 4-1. They lost week 1 and have gotten better since. They deserve credit for that. They won 3 straight games after that week 1 loss and won all 3 by 20-plus points. And I was saying, well, you know, they played 3 lousy teams. Let's see how they do on Sunday Night Football when they have to go to Kansas City. Okay, no problem. They went to Kansas City and put a hurting on the Chiefs and beat them by 18. So now, four straight wins for the Bills by 18-plus points. The NFL is a one-score league. The average margin of a game is 6 points. Here are the Bills winning by 18-plus four straight weeks, including beating the Chiefs on the road. So I have to reward them for what they've done. Because, yeah, they can't help playing bad teams, but they did exactly what they're supposed to. Not only beat them, blow them out. It's also the number one defense in the league statistically, and now it's the highest scoring offense. They have scored the most points in the league. They've allowed the fewest points in the league. They're 4-1 on a four-game winning streak with four straight blowouts. I have to put them number one. Do I think they are truly the best team in the league? No, I think the Buccaneers would beat them in a Super Bowl, but they are playing like the best team in the league, so I have to put them number one. And there you go. Our Tuesday top 10 on a Wednesday, because why not? We didn't get to it yesterday, but the 10 best teams in the NFL as we sit here today, 5 weeks in. Bengals 10, Browns 9, Packers 8, Ravens 7, Chargers 6, Cowboys 5. I put the Rams at number 4, and my top 3, the Cardinals, the Buccaneers, and the Bills number 1. I was doubting the Bills, but they really showed me something Sunday night in an impressive win against the Chiefs, who, by the way, of course, I leave out of the top 10. The Chiefs are not a good team right now. Coming up, we talked earlier about Dabo Swinney, and we heard from him and his press conference yesterday about the transfer portal. We'll hear from Brad Brunell from the ACC Media Day coming up when we come back. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Today is National Bring Teddy Bear to Work or School Day. Joe, did you bring your teddy bear with you?
I could have brought my teddy bear?
Yeah. Today and today only.
No one ever tells me these things.
I know. Second Wednesday in October. I'm sure I had... I don't remember. I'm sure I had a teddy bear as a kid. I remember the big thing was Build-A-Bear. And when I was a youngster, like really young, right, and my grandparents would always take all the grandkids for like your birthday. You go and you go build a bear, and then it'd have its name. They give you the little bear birth certificate, and it had its own little house. And my bear, I remember I put him in a basketball uniform, and he had a basketball attached to his hands. So I remember that bear. Did not sleep with him. He was over there in the corner, but that was always that was like the family tradition when you were of a certain age, go to build a bear. And that was always so cool to see him actually make the stuffed bear in front of you. So happy National Bring Your Teddy Bear to Work or School Day today.
Now, if you went to Build-A-Bear, did you keep it anywhere near the dog?
No. He was in his own little house. He was safe. It's also National Stop Bullying Day. I, of course, am anti-bullying, but I would warn you, if you bring your teddy bear to school today, probably not going to help.
Yeah, that's...
If there's any bullies
around. You're asking for it then.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a good... idea. Those two things don't really blend together.
You know, that would be a good marketing tool for karate schools. Stop Bullying Day.
Oh,
hey,
that's true. Yeah.
One way to stop bullying.
That's right.
Come learn self-defense.
Absolutely. It's also National Take Your Parents to Lunch Day. That's another thing I remember from being a school-age kid. There was one day, again, really young, like elementary school. If I remember correctly, there was one day like your parents would come in, or at least your mother or whatever, one parent would come in and they could have lunch with you at the school. And that was always like a big deal because as a little child, right, you know, you miss your parents when you go to school. So nowadays, that's probably more for when you're older. You take your parents to lunch day if you're an adult now. So you could do that as well if your parents are around. Cherish them while they're around as well. Take them to lunch today. National Take Your Parents to Lunch Day every October 13th. Anyways. We'll hear from Brad Brunell coming up as he spoke yesterday at Media Days for the ACC basketball season upcoming. But you can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones because Super Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
I know Bob's probably got his orange teddy bear. You know, he's always changing bandwagons, so he's probably got a shame, not a shame beaver, but he's got a double weedy type teddy bear that he takes to work with him today.
Yeah, he's got it back there in the office right now. He's been cradling it.
Yeah, that's what I know. It's in that fetal position. He's probably switching over. Probably next season he'll have season tickets for the Clemson Tigers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You think Bobby would switch over to become a Clemson fan next year?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think
those
he's
are
got
serious
that.
Claims.
He's been kind of switching like that for a year or two now. He's probably got a orange teddy bear or something like that in that office for a while now.
Wow.
You know?
Those are fighting words.
I don't care. I ain't worried about him. But anyway, I just thought I'd let you know, too, that how did the Braves come out?
They won. You told me not to get excited, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves yet. You thought we'd go to a game five, and then the Braves went out there and they won yesterday. What happened?
See? Yeah. I just say not to get excited. And don't worry about nobody.
Oh,
sure
okay.
enough, it came out how they whatever going to come out, you know. Nobody's
yeah.
got control. It's baseball.
Now, tomorrow is tomorrow's National Dessert Day. Can I get excited for that already?
Oh, whatever dessert, you know.
Whatever dessert you want for National.
What's there a National Day for anything like
anything.
Smoking?
Anything. We're working on a National Super Dave Day.
That would be cool.
Yeah, we're working
on it.
We're working on that. National Dessert Day tomorrow. What would be your number one dessert?
Ice cream, of course.
What kind of ice cream?
It'll be, it don't matter, as long as it ain't beer ice cream.
You'll eat any type of ice cream?
As long as it ain't beer ice cream.
Okay. And what do you put on the
or
ice cream?
Or fish or
what
whatever.
What type of toppings do you like on the ice cream?
I like whipped cream or...
Uh-huh. Do a little whipped cream on there.
You like those M&M toppings?
Oh, of course.
I like those.
Yep, throw some M&Ms. Okay.
Or Hershey's chocolate syrup a little
Ooh,
bit.
Ooh, yeah, that sounds pretty good. You go with the cone?
Or banana split.
Ooh, a little banana split.
With
okay.
everything.
Well, now you're talking. Huh? Yeah, now you're talking. A little banana split. So that's what I was going to ask you. Are you a cone guy or you like it just in the bowl? But you'd go banana split even.
I go banana split.
Okay.
Deal.
All right.
In a heartbeat.
Okay. Throw the whole banana in there and have a little whatever ice cream you wish with some M&Ms, some chocolate syrup, and whipped cream with a whole banana split. How about that? I'm not a banana split guy. I also can't have ice cream anymore. But boy, do I miss it. National Dessert Day coming up tomorrow. Dave warned us yesterday, don't get too excited about the Braves. He thought they were still going to lose the series. But I guess we can at least get excited now about Dessert Day coming up tomorrow. Coming up, we'll hear from Brad Brunell, plus Shane Beamer as well. How much of a test will Saturday be for the Gamecocks? We'll get to that coming up. Plenty to do. We'll wrap up Hour 2 next. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up Hour 2 here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Hey, don't forget to get your picks in by the end of the week. Our weekly Pick'em contest continues here throughout the football season. Just head over to charlestonsportsradio.com and get your picks in by 5 p.m. Friday. The winner will get themselves a Fan Zone gift card. charlestonsportsradio.com to go make your picks. You have till the end of the business day on Friday. Get your picks in for the weekend. While you're over there, you can always click on our show page and find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or even leave a comment for the show by clicking on our show page at charlestonsportsradio.com. We're up against it here at the end of the second hour, so we'll save the Brunell and Beamer audio for next hour. Still plenty to do here before we go. But I did see this just come across, and let's touch on this here before the top of the hour. Oklahoma now has themselves a bit of a quarterback battle despite the game on Saturday. I would tell you there really is no battle. You have to roll with Caleb Williams after that performance. He did take the majority of snaps with the first team in practice yesterday. Lincoln Riley has been non-committal, which is what he has to do. And Lincoln, Spencer Rattler's father said that Spencer is still committed to Oklahoma, even if he isn't the starter. If you're Lincoln Riley, though, in today's day and age, we were talking about the transfer portal earlier with Clemson, this is what you have to do as the coach. You have to remain not – you can't come out and say, like, oh, yeah, Caleb Williams is our guy moving forward. You have to keep up this mirage of it being a battle and maybe even splitting Rattler because you don't want to lose Rattler to the transfer portal like Kelly Bryant a couple years ago. Or De'Aaron King was playing, but he was unhappy with Houston. He reached that four-game limit. He said, all right, that's it. I'm out of here. And they lost their quarterback midseason. This case, it would be a backup quarterback, at least for the time being. But still, you want as much talent on that roster, especially in that quarterback room, as you can keep. I mean, ask Penn State. They lost their quarterback to the transfer portal. Will Levis went to Kentucky, and they were stuck with the kid that came out there the other night against Iowa and was in over his head because he's essentially the third stringer. Georgia, thank goodness they have a good enough backup quarterback right now. So for Oklahoma, you don't want to lose, even if he's going to be a backup moving forward, you don't want to lose that kid. So it's that fine line you have to walk now as a coach with the transfer portal. You have to, you know, tease them a little bit, lead them on that, oh, yeah, you know, it's a competition. We haven't made a decision yet. You guys may both play. You'll get split reps, even if you know in the back of your head or the front of your head, like, oh, yeah, it's Caleb Williams, and it should be for Oklahoma. We'll see what happens with Spencer Rattler moving forward, though, and that Oklahoma quarterback position. Hour 3 coming up next. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.